And it's not just Infosys. I think there's everyone from the GSI side, the services professional services side, has been focused so much about reskilling and retraining their existing professional service, their delivery staff, which is, you know, the right approach. But I think given the nature of AI and agentic AI and the need for selling more technology in a different way than traditional services, I think there's an opportunity for a company to start talking about what they're doing and how they're actually training their personnel on selling the technology.
Welcome to TBR Talks, decoding strategies and ecosystems of the globe's top tech firms, where we talk business model disruption in the broad technology ecosystem, from management consultancies to systems integrators, hyperscalers to independent software vendors, telecom operators to network and infrastructure vendors, and chip manufacturers to value-added resellers. We'll be answering some of the key intelligence questions we've heard from executives and business unit leaders among the leading professional IT services and telecom vendors. I'm Patrick Heffernan, Principal Analyst, and today we'll be talking about some recent travel with Fujitsu, Infosys, PwC, and Salesforce with Boz Hristov, Principal Analyst for TBR's Digital Transformation Practice. Boz, welcome back to TBR Talks, Season 5.
Wow, 5 seasons already?
It's kind of amazing. We're on our 5th season of TBR Talks. I think you might be the most frequent guest, but I'm not going to do the math, but that's probably true. I want to talk about travel and the events that we've been going to. This year has started off, we've each been to a few events. We got a lot more on our calendar coming up in next month and the month after and the month after, actually. A lot of stuff I'm looking forward to, but let's take a few minutes today to do two things. Look at and talk about the events that we've been to, and then talk about some things that we see overall and what those reflect about the market that we're covering. So the professional services, IT services, digital transformation, AI market that we're in. We did both go to Fujitsu in Toronto, and we had a fantastic podcast you can listen to when we sat and interviewed Asif Punja the day after. Absolutely fantastic discussion with him. So I don't think we need to go into that anymore, except I will say one quick thing about that I really enjoyed was how they brought everybody together in Toronto. And yes. Toronto is not an obvious choice for an analyst event, even for Fujitsu. And I realize that, you know, the Canadian and U.S. business are important. I thought that choice of location was really important.
It was a great location, great event. I agree. Yeah, it wasn't an obvious choice, especially in January in Toronto. Not everyone is fond of being, traveling in the middle of the winter to the Great North. But I think it worked out well, not just logistically, but also the content. Yeah, Fujitsu was, like I said, the episode we recorded with America's CEO was great. But just a kind of overall take, from the event, it's probably going to miscount the times, probably the last fifth or sixth Fujitsu event in the last 2.5-3 years that you and I have attended. So we kind of see the progression of the company's efforts to expand its America's business, which includes Canada and the U.S. and obviously some Caribbean business, but those are the main two markets that they're looking to. And they have a very deliberate strategy, that they know what they do well, they know where they play well, and they go really deep. As they're trying to expand that business, they are leaning on partners, both established and new ones, that are trying to help them to grow that business, both on the industry vertical side, as well as on the technology side. We know Fujitsu's background in technology and networking, has always been a strength for them. They're coming from that position, thinking about how they are organizing their value proposition around AI. I think it's an important element. We talked in the past about amalgamation of AI. I think that story continues to help them to navigate the hype around the technology. It's certainly, there's some aspirations, as every company does, looking to the future, building up their consulting business with the Wayfinders, looking to do a little bit more with some of their technology partners, and get into the use cases. They're very transparent, which I certainly appreciate that. And they're very, humble in their own way, and really trying to do things the right way, and they're very upfront. So which is, I'm not saying that others are not, but I think it comes through much sooner in the conversations, both during the presentations and, offline, with executives and the partners and the clients. So that's definitely a huge help to understand the story better. There's a way to go for them, obviously. We spoke about how much, you know, relationships and the use cases around the likes with ServiceNow could be of help. You know, having, you know, ServiceNow executives in the past on stage alongside with Fujitsu is great. You know, having now executives and talking from some of the AI partners, you know, that's always of help, you know. So that's it's definitely, you know, like I said, an evolving story. Small, incremental, positive changes. I think it's kind of the way to summarize Fujitsu. And like I said, the podcast we did and the event perspective we put together goes a little bit more in detail about that. But I would say that, you know, looking forward to the next one, you know, hear more about some of the initiatives that they have embarked on, both in Canada as well in the US, and really trying to see, you know, learn more about how much more Japan is supporting, you know, and see North America, Americas as a region that can actually change the perception of who Fujitsu is and how can actually be, you know, a competitive peer to some of its more, the larger, more well-known names here in the US and in Canada.
Right. You said a lot of things there. You probably saw me taking notes. I want to come back to a couple of those things, yeah. But let's pivot real quickly to, maybe not real quickly, we'll see, to the last event that you attended, yeah, which was Infosys down in New York City.
Right. Yeah. So Infosys event just last week, you know, and Infosys, you know, and I've been attending that event for the last several years as well. You know, I can see Infosys does two kind of main events where analysts have a great exposure to executives, partners, and clients. One is the Infosys Analyst and Advisor Day, springtime, and then the second one is the Confluence event, which is the larger client event where they also host analyst sessions that we have attended in the past and written about and discussed in the past. I think what I saw from Infosys this time around that was nuanced and then the evolution was about, of course, AI, enterprise AI strategy was a big topic, right? That continues to be a narrative that everyone's expanding on. I think there was a lot more discussion around domain, and they brought in the use cases for a lot more focus on the industry specific, kind of like going a little deeper. The panel discussions told the story, less so being, we still had some of the executives presenting and updating, you know, the traditional kind of analyst event, the strategy and whatnot, but the panel discussions told the story. The panel discussions were a mix of clients that were not just a traditional CIO client, but the CMOs, the business, the operations. So that was a good kind of a presentation of expansion into the enterprise and the building trust with various personas. So the domain discussion was definitely great and nuanced that, you know, it was, they've done in the past, but I felt like there was a little more like emphasis on the domain discussion. The second piece that was, you know, more of a culmination, I would say, it's a topic around the talent. I think everyone talks about talent these days, and that has always been, but even more these days with AI. Infosys outlined a very clear path about the career progression and the various parts of the pyramid, how they're training them, how they're actually trying to ensure that they're the people that are involved in development, deployment, management of any AI tools, you know, gets prepared to do that. Very clear, you know, we'll go into details. So we're working on an event perspective shortly. So we'll get into more details and clients can, you know, come to us and we have those conversations separately. But very clear path, which is important. I think there's an opportunity for them to reemphasize a little bit more the sales component of the talent pyramid, I would say. And it's not just Infosys. I think there's everyone from the GSI side, the service professional services side, has been focused so much about reskilling and retraining their existing professional service, their delivery staff, which is, you know, the right approach. But I think given the nature of AI and agentic AI and the need for selling more technology in a different way than traditional services, I think there's an opportunity for companies to start talking about what they're doing and how they're actually training their personnel on selling the technology. I think we may see that as a kind of the next wave of focus and expansion and announcements from the companies about AI sellers, quote unquote, just kind of frame that, you know, what does that mean? You can argue that maybe the forward deployed engineers is probably that model that's kind of the bridge into that. Maybe AI sellers is too hard. Maybe you have to be managing the narrative with the technology partners so they don't want to go too far into the selling AI for the AI sake. I get that part. But I think we, as analysts, would appreciate a little bit more transparency about what exactly, you know, companies are doing beyond the FDE label, put this way, and how right. Does that fits into the broader talent pyramid discussion.
Right.
So Infosys, going back to Infosys, more domain, more clear to clients, and a greater exposure to personas that are beyond just the CAO that, you know, that were brought into stage and partners. In previous events like that, you know, they would bring in traditional partners like SAP, Microsoft, and Oracle. Now they had some AI partners that were on stage that actually are starting to talk about, you know, which is kind of like you can kind of gradually see that, you know, pivot into introducing the new personas, the new partners that are important for them from moving forward.
Right. I'm curious. So when I went to the PwC Australia event, and at one point when the leaders were speaking, they outlined three or four challenges that they are facing, or challenges to growth, things that they, in their own minds, they need to put down their strategy to how they're going to tackle these things. And critical to how they were going to tackle them was talent. Mm-hmm. They came back to that a few times, and it's sort of, I can picture in my notebook where I have a big, you know, star around the word talent, because I'm like, huh, the problems that they're identifying are ones that are going to be addressed by talent management. So it sounds like Infosys maybe had a similar mindset.
Yeah, yes, I think we have heard from Infosys kind of the pieces being put together over the last couple of years. They've talked about power programmers. They've talked about the various career paths for the engineers that are involved into developing the small language models that are, you know, that they have, or the agents that are, you know, attached to the people that are actually selling the outcome-based and the value-based services that they sell versus the traditional software engineers. So we have heard some of those. I think it has come a little bit more, has crystallized the talent strategy. And I think they kind of understand what needs to happen next,
right,
as they have experience and they tested some of those models over the last couple of years, and they know exactly. And same thing will be easier when they're looking to recruit new talent as well. Because if you are someone who wants to be involved in AI more than somebody else, you know what your career path is, and
right,
you can kind of know what does that entail, what's your day-to-day work going to look like. So I think that's... agents are great. You still need people.
You still need people. Yeah. And I will say, so a couple things out of the PwC Australia trip, because you know PwC really well. You spent a lot of time with them yourself. One thing that really struck me, they managed to do two seemingly contradictory things at the same time. One was they had they had people there from PwC Global. Mm-hmm. I know they're, you know, PwC member firm, but people that have a global role. They had them there, and they talked about, in almost every client use case, they talked about bringing in assets and people, or leveraging assets and people from around the world, from PwC Poland, PwC UK, PwC India, PwC US. So there was that global, this is how we're a global firm. At the same time, it was so heavily focused on Australia, New Zealand clients, the Australia, New Zealand delivery, the Australia, New Zealand problems in the market and how they're helping solve them. So they managed to be both very global, which is a challenge for any of the big four firms, and simultaneously very focused on Australia, New Zealand, which I thought was kind of neat. I hadn't seen it. I hadn't felt it that much before. Even when we were in Toronto with Fujitsu, you know, they that was still always a challenge. I think we've seen it with PwC many times in the past. The other thing that I thought was curious, and I'm going to try to pay attention to this at all the events we go forward. You know how we've sat there and we've heard client stories. Yeah. And one of the, you know, first question is always, what did you actually do? But the second question is often, is this an established client or was this a new client? PwC had a good mix of the established clients, then what I would call, you know, sort of new clients that they earned through reputation, through, you know, through whatever word of mouth, whatever. And then the I can't think of a better term than the one clients, meaning there was an RFP that they actually competitively bid for. And they were, PwC was very good about explaining up front, like that's what this type of client was as they launch into the use case. Overall, an excellent event and a really good opportunity to see, you know, what PwC is doing well in Australia. But I want to now, so that was Fujitsu, Infosys, PwC. I want to talk about a couple things now, sort of use cases, client use cases, because they feature so prominently in these events that we go to. And I want to talk about the value of being in person. That is, after all, you know, what these events are all about. Yep. And then I want to look out 5 years and say, what is our travel schedule and what are the things that we're going to be doing in 5 years going to look like? So starting with client use cases, there's two mistakes everybody makes, both at these events and in thought leadership that we read. I shouldn't say everybody, because I'm going to say PwC didn't make these mistakes. But the two most common mistakes are you don't know what the consultancy or the IT services company actually did. You hear a great story, but you're like, so what did you do? Yeah. The second common mistake is so much time gets spent on describing the client themselves, how big they are, what market they're in, what challenges they face, all of which is important to know as context, but there's a limit to context before context just becomes, you know, the entirety of the story. So PwC was extremely good about it seems like they prepped their clients well to ensure that they talked about the PwC part of the story, and they didn't spend too much time setting the stage. I think they had a big advantage because, with the exception of two of us, all the analysts in the room were Australian, New Zealand analysts or local to the region analysts. And so they knew those companies. They didn't have to explain who those companies were. At one point, one of the Australia analysts, as a presentation started, reached over to me and showed me his notebook because he had written that the company was the equivalent of AAA. So what was funny is he didn't write AAA. He wrote AA. But at that point, I knew it was an insurance company.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm pretty sure we're not talking about Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm pretty sure this is AAA. So he was giving me the context, although not quite getting it right, but it was pretty funny. But I think that part, they solved both of those problems really well. I don't know what your experience was at Infosys. Similar, where they had those challenges and they overcome them or no?
To a degree, I think a little bit of both. I would say there were some clients that were very explicit about how they work with Infosys, but not all. I think there's a room for improvement, I would say. And I, like you said in the beginning, it's not a challenge for Infosys. I think most clients, most companies that we attend at events to is exactly clients come on stage and they start talking about the problems, but sometimes even they forget to mention the name of the vendor that is hosting them, and actually they work with. And I understand partially because they don't work with only one vendor.
Correct.
So they work with a vast majority, and it's kind of how they have to manage that carefully, right? But you are the vendor event and you're hosted by that vendor. So please, if you guys are listening to us, do us a favor. Be very specific about you work with company X and this is how they helped us. Right. That's a very helpful because then it changes our way of like thinking for questions and understanding a little bit more, amplifying the value of the company that you guys work with. Why did you choose them? Also, what went wrong, you know?
Yeah.
How did the company overcome that? I know nobody wants to talk about what went wrong, but we know all projects, something goes wrong.
Yep.
There's not a perfect project ever, period. So opportunity for having a more of an enriched discussion about how you work with vendors. Why did you choose them? How did you guys set up the next stage, next phases of the project? So again, Infosys is started to address some of those challenges through some of the presentations, but not all of them are.
Yeah, fair enough. Very, very rare that it's done extremely well. How about sort of the in-person aspect of this? And I was reflecting on this on the way back from Australia, which is a long way and a lot of time to reflect, how things have changed a lot since the pandemic, and there's an even higher expectation, I feel like, to be in person. And so what is it that you get out of being in person? And I'll jump ahead a little bit and say you mentioned earlier that panel discussions told the story. I would argue that a panel discussion in person is 10,000 times more valuable than a panel discussion virtually. So
100%.
So in addition to panel discussions telling the story, what else do you get out of being in person?
I mean, self-serving connections.
Yeah.
Putting a face to the name and just having that, building new relationships and understanding, nothing can substitute, a sidebar conversation, before or after the event, either the cocktail hour or dinner or whatnot, or at the game as we were at the Infosys, watching the Rangers and having, the suite for select clients and partners and just making those connections. And, so that's like I said before, I mean, agents are great. Humans are always still in need, still in demand. And I think that cannot be substituted no matter what. So I think, it's always about having those experiences, hearing firsthand. People just like to talk to people. And as much as we all appreciate the technology can help us to make our everyday lives easier, there's still parts of our brains that, are getting a little bit more of that socialization aspect that we all crave for. So connection, socialization, really learning, from the body language. That's part of it. The unspoken, parts of it is equally important to the spoken one, that people discuss it on stage or otherwise, and you can kind of get that sense of who's doing what and why, and getting to that. Also looking at our peers as well, learning from them. What are the questions that they're asking as well, and trying to think about the questions we're getting from our clients as well. So that's an element that we know that some people that really like to ask questions, and which is great, So that's, we learn from those along the way. So that's kind of some of the aspects that we're always looking for. A great venue, that doesn't hurt.
It's always nice.
Always nice, yeah.
It's always nice. Yeah. I think who stays in the room is really important too. Yeah. I think for years now, we've been looking at when somebody isn't speaking and they're one of the executives or really one of the clients is always fascinating too. When they stay in the room and they still seem engaged in what's going on, that tells you a lot about it. At PwC Australia, they had a newly promoted manager. So... not a senior manager, a principal, just a newly appointed manager who kind of served as the MC all day. She spoke at the beginning, but then most importantly, she spoke right after the executives, the leadership of PwC Australia outlined their strategy and, where the firm is and all that kind of stuff. And then she reflected on, okay, that's what this feels like. Everything they said, that's what it feels like down here at the manager level. That's what it feels like working day to day in this firm. It brought the culture out so much. I mean, everyone talks about culture, but sometimes it's really hard to feel. Yeah. And then all day long, before a client session, she reflected on, I've worked with a similar client on a similar problem, or this is what that team really went, So that was enormously helpful. And I think being in person made all the difference there. I would also say to go back to Fujitsu for a moment, from what you were saying earlier, one of the things that you mentioned, we've been to so many events with them in the last 2 years or whatever it's been. Being in person allows us to see the consistency of the message and the consistency of the strategy. And at the same time, the progress, the sometimes incremental and sometimes a lot faster than incremental progress that they're making. And I don't think you get that if you're not in person having those conversations again and again. So let's keep doing the in-person stuff. So now let's look out 5 years. I think we could look out 1 year and say over 2026, we're going to see a lot more. We've been asking for SAP and Microsoft and AWS and to be at the table with the companies that we cover. I think 2026, we're going to see a whole lot of AI companies. We're going to see Anthropic at the table. We're going to see all of them brought in. Fair enough. Got that. But if you look out 5 years, what do you think going to analyst events or traveling to see our clients is going to look like 5 years from now? Keeping in mind, 5 years ago, we didn't know if we were going to do anything in person because we were still in the throes of the pandemic. But I'll go first to give you a second to think about it since I gave you no warning, which I don't usually do, but I'll do it this time. I think we'll see more smaller, focused events in quotation marks, because I think they won't feel like the big, 100 analyst events or the big 10,000 people events. I went to Salesforce in Australia as well.
Yeah.
Massive event. I think my biggest takeaway from that, and we will have a special report on that that'll come out. Everybody can read the rest of what I think. But one of the things that the sort of epiphany I had sitting in a room with 10,000 people was how locked in Salesforce is to the seller. You're talking about salespeople forward deployed sales engineers, maybe we're coming to forward deployed sales engineers. Salesforce has that market locked and everything they do is focused on addressing the needs of and extracting dollars from salespeople within an organization. But that was a 10,000 person big huge event. I think we're going to see a lot more smaller focused, let's gather. And PwC Australia was kind of a good example of that because there were two dozen analysts. It was pretty small.
Yeah.
And there was even a time at the Salesforce event where we had a sort of a breakout with public sector focused analysts in Salesforce. And that was just a handful of people that all knew each other.
Sure.
With the exception of me, I didn't know any of them.
Yeah.
And so I think we're going to see more of those kind of, because it allows for just such a greater conversation. And I think as analyst relations teams get better at understanding what each analyst and each individual firm brings to the table, they'll be able to cater the events to that. And then I hope, knock on wood, literally, I hope to see in 5 years a return to the experience centers, to use the PwC phrase. Being in an office is great.
Yeah.
Being in an event space is kind of not great. But being in those experience centers is just, it was tremendous when we used to go to this, because you see, again, you have the face-to-face in-person interaction with people who are delivering to clients all the time. Yeah. You see the space that a client walks into. So you have a little bit of feel of what the clients are going through. And you also see the investment, the innovation, the forward-lookingness of the company that you're there with. So I'm hoping that we see more of that going forward. But what about you?
Where were
you?
Yeah, maybe using that last point about the experience centers and the kind of innovation spaces that we've attended in the past and kind of like gone through a small lull right now, but it's more like the event spaces these days. But more of the practitioners-led discussions, events. As you mentioned, PwC's example, newly promoted manager, MCing and connecting that. I think hearing from practitioners, I mean, all due respect to the C-suite executives, you know, we would love to hear their story. But for us, it's about understanding and connecting it to that everyday operations as well.
Yep.
So it's good to, and I know we've experienced some of that in the past with some events, but having a practitioner being involved, and I know with those folks, those professionals get excited because they are rarely heard outside within the boundaries of the organization.
True.
So it's an experience for them. And I think it just creates a different dynamic. And I think that's, if we can hear more of that, if we had more of those practitioners-led events and involved events, I think it would be great. I've been very curious. And I don't know if that's going to happen. That's going to be a signal to exactly how the market is changing. An Anthropic or a Palantir or OpenAI analyst event.
Mm.
Because there's this narrative in the market about the disruption of all those companies disrupting, including our industry, analyst industry, right? If we see a Palantir, if we're going to see an OpenAI or Anthropic, I do believe we will.
Yeah.
Because every cycle goes through a hype.
Yep.
And every, you know, they have to look for where the new growth opportunity will be coming from. So I think we were going to see that. To be very curious to thinking about an in-person analyst event run by born on the AI companies, basically, right? Because you can argue they can just do it with agents. Why do you need the analyst?
Right.
So my bet is that we're going to see that in 5 years. We're going to see those companies running analysts.
Okay.
They're going to start developing their own analyst relations teams.
Analyst relations agents.
Yeah,
can't even say it.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they'll start doing that type of stuff.
Excellent.
Perfect example: NVIDIA. NVIDIA needs any further promotion?
Not really.
They do have a very strong analyst relations team.
Exceptionally good analyst relations.
So that's an example of a company that is doing exceptionally well and still, you know, relies and leans on the analyst community as good as they are. So yeah.
Excellent. Thank you, Boz, for coming in. Appreciate it very much.
Thanks for having me.
Next week, I'll be speaking with Chris Antlitz about Mobile World Congress 2026. Don't forget to send us your key intelligence questions on business strategy, ecosystems, and management consulting through the form in the show notes below. Visit tbri.com to learn how we help tech companies, large and small, answer these questions with the research, data, and analysis that my guests bring to this conversation every week. Once again, I'm your host, Patrick Heffernan, Principal Analyst at TBR. Thanks for joining us, and see you next week.